Welcome to a very special episode of Minute Impossible. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to investigate with us the movie Mission Impossible, 1 minute at a time. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Chris.
Me, Doug.
Doug, welcome.
Me, thank you.
This is a very special episode because this is episode 94.
94.
Long time.
94.
Long time.
It's all in your inflection.
94.
There you go.
Minute 94 begins with Kittredge noticing Frankenstein's monster needs to go potty, and ends with Claire showing us her true colors. A lot of going on in this minute.
Yep.
That's why it's so special.
Yeah, people are exposed for what they really are.
Yeah, and this minute also shows us, again, this set. It's so brightly lit. I love this train set. You know, I know it's fake. I know the stuff outside's not really happening. It looks really good. This is one of those scenes, again, with Brian De Palma, kind of like when we had the scene at the Gavarian restaurant and the scene in the White Room and the scene at the embassy. He's really good at doing shots with multiple people. Other than not getting coverage on Frankenstein's monster in the last couple of minutes to explain that he's there, it looks really nice. And we are being very hard on it, not knowing which way they're going, like if they're going to the back of the train or the middle of the train, but it looks really good.
You know, as we look at the set, though, in that last bit of the scene, there's no other hall to another area. This looks like it's the end.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the CG, especially in the upcoming minutes, doesn't hold up. But, like, I can buy that you're on a train that's going very fast because of the way the background whips mm-hmm. by. And I meant to say this all the way back in minute 91, that I can buy it.
91.
I can buy it.
Yeah,
I agree. As the movie moves on and moves into its finale, a lot of that CG does not hold up, especially when we've got a helicopter inside of a tunnel later, and you know, in a bullet train. It's almost too much Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
There's too many things that it's just... I'm sure that when they were doing this too, it was very ambitious because I've seen pictures of the set and this was all green screen and they built a lot of the train parts so he could be on it. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of extra work and this is a very simple effect that looks great. So hats off, guys. Yeah. Good job.
This, I didn't start putting this whole part together until watching it in this format because I always thought Claire walking past Kittredge was a dumb move because I thought Kittredge zeroed in on her as she walked past him.
No, he completely ignores her.
I had no idea. As many times
does,
I watched
He this. Does glance at her Tookus, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, who wouldn't?
This is where he notices Claire as she walks by, but he doesn't notice it is Claire. He just notices it's a woman. And then he sees Frankenstein's monster is like banging with his shoulder up against a door in between the cars. I guess that's where the bathroom is.
Yeah, I always thought Frankenstein's monster was also zeroed in on her, but I didn't realize that he was trying to shoulder that door in.
Because he's trying to get to Luther, who now he thinks has the phone. Bad phone.
I thought he was just standing there.
No, he's like slamming into it too. That's what's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
So the what's happening is Frankenstein's monster is the one who gets Kittredge's attention because he's banging on this stupid door.
Right.
Just like a dumb monster would.
So he's like, Barnes, come with me. And again, Barnes with a game. They come up to the door. Both Claire and Frankenstein's monster leave. And by the time Kittredge gets to the door, there's nobody there. They cut to a shot of Luther. And Luther has his entire body propped up against that door, trying to keep Frankenstein's monster out. I don't know. Luther's a big dude, but I don't know if he'd be able to keep out Frankenstein's monster. But, you know, let's go with it.
Yeah, a guy that's full body trying to throw his shoulder into a door. I don't know how you're keeping him out.
He's Chris Farley-ing that bad boy. Yeah. He's like jammed in there with his arms up and he's bracing himself. But, yeah, he does that. And out of nowhere, Barnes doesn't even hesitate. He whips out a lock-picking kit.
And does it behind his back.
And then does it behind his back. I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? This guy turned into a super spy. And then it hit me. You know why Barnes is so good at his job now? He saw Kittredge's reaction to Dunlow screwing up mm-hmm. in Langley and sending him to Alaska.
Oh, man.
So it's like when a boss fires somebody in front of everybody. so that everybody's like, we gotta be careful because our boss is insane. Mm-hmm. He's gonna fire us. Barnes is like, I have got to bring my A game.
You know what it was? Barnes back in his early days was like a A+ agent. But, you know, after you become a veteran after a few years, you're like, leave it to the new guys to bring their A game. I'm just going to kick my feet up on the desk for the next 10 years to my retirement. But he saw, you know, like you said, he saw Dunlow get shipped away. So he's like, all right, time to bring it back to the old school. Show him how we did it back in the day.
I have another headcanon for Barnes's younger years. And it comes from that lockpicking kit. I think he was more of an Oliver Twist. He was like in a gang of street urchins running around. And Kittredge was more of a Fagin and came in and took him in and brought him into his gang and made him into the man that he is. He was an older kid because obviously Barnes is like 30 years older than Kittredge. So he was a terrible child thief. He was a 27-year-old child thief. And Kittredge found him on the streets.
Makes it sound like he's stealing children. He's a child thief.
Of Langley, Virginia, and raised him up and made him into this person. What if Barnes doesn't exist? Has Barnes ever talked to anybody but Kittredge?
Oh. Right. He could be his Brian De Palma.
What are you saying, Chris?
Nothing.
All right.
Hold on. I listen to too many minute-by-minute shows, but this has come up. Where has this come on before? Where somebody was, Ferris Bueller? Where everything was a figment of Cameron's imagination.
Oh, yeah. Ferris Bueller's like his id or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like all the things he wants to say.
Exactly. So you're saying Kittredge is Barnes's id? Or
Not id, but like he's the thing. Maybe Kittredge has this job and he's so stressed that he's fractured a little bit. And he keeps Barnes in his mind at any time something goes wrong. Mm.
Somebody to blame?
Yeah. What did you do, Barnes?
I like it. I can buy it. Kittredge has been in the game for too long, so his mind is gone.
So what Kittredge is really doing is he's picking that lock himself, but in his mind, Barnes is doing it without even looking.
Mm.
That's where I think it's all come crumbling down.
Right. The 27-year-old child thief that he picked off the streets of Langley many, many years ago.
Yep.
All right.
So that's why I'm telling you, this story tracks.
I don't see any holes in this at all.
Nope. The older man, the man older than Kittredge, is a child thief that Kittredge took under his wing.
So I have a question. So Claire goes to the next car.
Mm-hmm.
Frankenstein,
or maybe two or three cars down. Yeah, the next car. Sorry.
And Frankenstein's monster follows her, but he's not following her. He's just trying to get away from Kittredge.
Yeah, again, I don't think any of these three people are honed in on each other. I think that Kittredge saw Frankenstein causing a ruckus, so he followed him. And then when Frankenstein left, he decided to open the door instead of following him. Mm-hmm. Claire only knows Kittredge is following her. She knows who Frankenstein's monster is because I'm sure Ethan has told him. You know, there's this hulking crazy man with long hair who never talks, who captured me before. So she knows who he is. Well, you know what? Maybe she doesn't.
I don't think she does.
She doesn't react like she knows him, does she?
Mm-mm. No, I don't think so.
Or she's just trying to compartmentalize it and ignore it because she knows Luther's in that bathroom.
I have a lot of WTFs in my notes.
I've got so many.
Yeah, before I started piecing that part together. Because I thought Frankenstein's monster knew who Claire was. I thought Kittredge knew who Claire was. And I thought Kittredge knew who Frankenstein's monster was. So
no, Max didn't even know who Ethan was. And they've never met Claire.
Yeah, right. Right. That's just me not watching the movie as much as you guys.
That's okay.
Because it made no sense to me after they left the car and then Kittredge comes up to the bathroom and stops. I'm like, but the people you're after went to the next car. Why are you stopping?
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on there either.
But if they know that somebody that Frankenstein's monster was looking for is in the bathroom, all of a sudden the lockpick comes out. And what if it's just like a, you know, old lady taking a donker?
It could be. Well, I think at this point they're leaving no stone unturned. I think that's their plan. They're going to go. I don't even know how walking through the train is what they need to be doing. They're looking for Max. Mm-hmm. And I think anything out of the ordinary, they're going to check right now.
Right. So they're still looking for laptops, but they see this guy trying to break in the bathroom door. So that's what they're zeroing in on.
So yeah, they've got a little ADHD on this. They're like, they need to continue with the laptop thing. They walk past Mathis and Max on their laptop. Maybe that's part of what the whole reason why they walked by. They needed an excuse because someone in Brian De Palma, and I won't do his voice. If I did his voice, I wouldn't do it. But, you know, I bet you when they were shooting this, they're like, there has to be a reason they don't notice Max and Mathis sitting there. And the reason is they're halfway through there almost to Max and Mathis when.
Mm-hmm. Well, Max and Mathis are also facing the opposite, with their backs towards them as they're coming forward.
Sure, but they would also be checking their screen. They'd see the knock list. Mathis has the knock list just showing.
Yeah.
But there's almost, not to ruin further future minutes, but there's almost no payoff on this whole bathroom Luther thing.
There isn't. It all happens in a secondary thing because at the end of the movie, Luther is with them.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously they opened it up and were like, "Hello, Luther."
No, I think the reveal of Jim that comes up in a few minutes is at that bathroom door.
It and is. Once, is that they're in that hallway in between the two cars.
And once that happens, that's when I think Luther comes out and is like, "Hey."
When Ketchridge gets the transmission from Ethan or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah. All right. And that's and Claire. This is a good time to talk about Claire. Claire, here I'm going to bring it down a little bit. Claire opens the last door she'll ever open. And she walks into the last room that she'll ever be in.
Sad
Poor
Bill.
Claire.
Sad Bill.
Shout out to Indiana Jones Minute.
And she says, "Ethan is on his way. Do we really have to kill him?" So there's two things going on here. At some point, she was okay with the plan of killing Ethan. Mm-hmm. Okay. Secondly, now she's had a change of heart. Okay again.
Because she almost boned Ethan.
Yeah.
That's why.
If that's Jim, it should raise all kinds of red flags.
Yeah. Well, we see in the shadows, we see Jim. Jim is sitting there. So she knows. We now know that she knows.
But does she know that we know that she knows?
Yeah, this is where it gets confusing.
She knows that he knows.
But does he know that she knows that he knows that he knows?
You Ralph Crampton, another New Jersey staple. The Honeymooners.
Bang, zoom to the moon, Claire.
Pour some out for our friend Jackie.
And he's going to bang, zoom her to the moon, all right, though.
Yeah.
Pow! Right in the kisser.
He doesn't. He's going to get her in the kisser.
Pow! Right in the liver.
Right in the liver. We haven't talked about this in a while. Where's Krieger? Where's he supposed to be in this plan? I know where he is. I know where he's going to be in a second. But where does Ethan, Claire, and Luther as part of this foursome plan supposed to be?
Maybe he's supposed to be their escape.
Maybe he's supposed to get them off the train.
Off the train, right.
But they're going in the tunnel.
He's supposed to meet them on the other side? I don't know.
Maybe he's their pickup point. Yeah, you're right.
Unless
you did not know, I am actually the train conductor. This, you wanted me to drive. I am driving the train.
I will Uber to you on the French side.
Yeah, my side. I will meet you on my side of the.
So this is a good place to talk about this. The plan. Okay. This has been something we've talked about since minute one. Okay. What is the plan of the knock list? And what this is where it finally comes to fruition. And we finally know who has been playing who. And we haven't gotten to the culmination of the plan, but we have gotten as far as the plan is going to be going. Let's talk about this plan. Was this the plan all along? I don't think so.
From whose point of view?
Jim. Let's talk about Jim and Claire as the people who want the knock list. They want the knock list to sell to Max. Max wants this thing. They're going to get it for her. They are framing. They're going to murder the IMF team. They're going to steal the knock list. So this was the original plan. They were to kill the team. Krieger gets the disc from Gallitzin at that gate in the right. Foggy banks off of off in Prague. And then Ethan takes the fall for it and thinks Claire and Jim are dead. That's the plan.
Movie over.
That's plan number one. That was plan number one, correct?
Yes.
That's where we are now. So that's the explanation of what the plan was supposed to be. What Jim didn't know was that that knock list was a decoy and that Kittredge was already on to him. That's where it gets confusing. Kittredge threw a monkey wrench into the entire plan by having a fake list that had a tracker on it. So new plan. Screw the knock list. Kill Ethan. Take Ethan's money for the knock list.
Now, who are we in this plan?
I'm still Jim.
Okay.
What do we do? He no longer, I mean, now he's at a point where Ethan wants to kill Job for killing his team, right? Correct?
Yes.
Maybe not kill. Maybe he wants to bring him to justice.
Well, I think that's the plan at this point for Ethan.
That's Ethan's plan. Yeah. Ethan's plan is get Job, bring him to justice, clear his name.
Yeah.
But Job's plan is, I don't care about the knock list. I'll take care of the knock list and we'll just kill Ethan for it.
Yeah.
And I don't, because he already has the knock list. Max has the knock list at this point. He just wants the money.
Yeah.
But who masterminded this? Is this like Max puts out an ad on Craigslist?
Well,
like,
what we learned earlier, and it's always glossed over, is the fact that Max turned Jim. Jim was a sour federal employee with a problem and a too young of a wife. Mm-hmm. And he was disenfranchised with what the IMF had become, having to answer to Kittredge, all these different things that were happening. So he was doing little jobs and making little bits of money. And I think this giant Easter egg fell in his lap.
Okay.
The knock list was his way out because this involved Claire and Jim dying.
All right. So Jim was going to cash in on this regardless.
It was going to be $10 million, and it was going to be – that's how much she had offered Jim, because she offered Ethan the same amount that she offered Joe.
And he was going to disappear with Claire.
Yes. Presumed dead. Ethan would take the fall for it, because they needed someone to take the fall. They couldn't just have the entire team die, because that wouldn't have worked. Right. Jim knew that. So he's like, Ethan's the best person to frame. And that's the plan.
All right. So they had a backup plan once plan A didn't pan out.
Yeah, they might not have had that backup plan, but Jim created it on the fly. It had a lot less moving parts. It was pretty much let Ethan do whatever Ethan's going to do, mm-hmm. and then get the money from him.
And right now, we're seeing a culmination of the backup plan.
We're at this point. Claire thinks Jim is about to finish the plan, and she just wants kill to change Ethan, one.
And yep. She's trying to talk him out of killing Ethan.
Yeah, because I guess she's having second thoughts.
Right. So everybody thinks everybody thinks Jim is dead. So Claire meets up with Jim. They kill Ethan. They're on an island somewhere with $10 million.
And Kittredge catches Ethan and Max with a knock list, and they go to jail forever.
Okay. All right.
So that's a good plan.
Solid plan. Yeah. Yeah. Airtight.
It's a plan that after doing 94 minutes of this movie, we've come to the conclusion that this is the way this plan worked. The movie, and Chris and I have talked about this with other guests, the movie doesn't explain this plan great.
No.
It's a lot of, and I think that's the problem, is that most people, when they're talking about this movie, if they have seen it and liked it, they're always like, now what was the plan again?
Yeah, exactly.
Where it gets hazy for me is once Ethan realizes that Jim is alive, he realizes that Jim was behind the execution of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does he figure that out, and why does he still go along with it?
Because he wants to get Max.
That's Ethan's main objective.
I think that's the plan Ethan had. Ethan is still an ethical IMF employee, whether or not he is or not.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do the right thing. The right thing is, now, he stole this knock list to get Job out of the open. That was the only way he was going to draw him out. Otherwise, Job would never. He didn't know Job was Jim at that point.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And what? But the second he did the job, and they were back, and he showed up. Now he knows it was him. Now he's altering it a little bit. So now he gets Job and Max.
Okay. Fair enough.
So in the end, he's going to help save the world, help capture a rat, and also clear his name.
Even if he has to play along with the Jim being dead thing.
Yep.
Gotcha.
It doesn't hurt him not telling. I mean, Because now he knows Claire's in on it too.
Yeah, and does he at that point think that Kittredge is the mole? Or this
no.
Right then he changes his opinion, right? When he's
right.
thinking it
when
through.
When they're in that little cafe and talking about it, he knows he's not the mole. Okay. He says it out loud so Jim thinks he knows.
Right.
Okay. Kittredge.
Gotcha.
And that's where it ends. That's where this minute ends. This is the entire plan has come to fruition. Everything's gone according to the second plan. And now we're involved also in a secret plan of Ethan's from that Ethan started about halfway, three quarters of the way through this movie.
Which leads to more questions I have next minute.
All right, great. Well, this is a good place to stop our questions and start talking about Tech of the Ep. This one's going to be light. But we're going to do it. Here we go. Tech of the Ep. Christopher Ramirez, what do you think would be the Tech of the Ep?
Barnes's little pickpocket set.
Lockpick.
No, well, you said he was like you know, to Oliver lock Twist. Pick. So he's
stealing people's wallets.
His pickpocket set.
He doesn't have a pickpocket set. That's his hands. His hands are his pickpocket tools.
Well, you know.
His lockpick tools.
His lockpick okay. tools. Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay.
Jesus. All right. His Oliver Twistness.
Barnes just stole my wallet. I'm sitting here by myself. His pickpocket hands just stole my
wallet. I'd love to see Barnes like, hey, Kittredge, what time is it? He looks at his watch and it's gone. And he's like holding it. It's like, damn it,
fool
Barnes.
You. Fooled you.
That's the third time we've referenced Spaceballs.
Yes.
Once an episode.
Got to be a record. I want to set a record of some kind.
You are least downloaded podcast episodes. Largest drop-off from Monday to Friday. You're going to hit them all, Doug. Yes. Don't worry. Most alcohol consumed by a human during a five-day recording session.
Hey, a record is a record.
A record is a record. Hey, Jonathan, you can make a gun out of anything. All right.
I would also like to say the lockpick set.
You know what? It's a audio daily double. We've all said it. It's the lock set. It's the lock set. There's not much. There's no other tech.
Are we sure that Jonathan's not inebriated as well now? Because he's like slurring his words. It's a lock set.
I'm not slurring.
It's a lock set.
You're slurring your
words. The oscillate. It's the oscillate.
It's more of a stroke than anything else.
Slow down on that mineral water.
He's lying on some nerve that's making him go slurry.
Other than picking the door that Claire walks in, there's literally nothing. A hinge? Other than a hinge, mm-hmm. There's nothing else in this episode. So I think lockpicks.
There is the magical caboose that they're in because, you know, Jim walked from the back or from the back to the front, and she's walking from the front to the back, and I don't know where they're meeting up because there's nothing behind them.
And Kittredge looked at Claire's caboose.
Yes, so there you go.
Yeah, there's been two cabooses.
Two cabooses.
Caboose.
One train caboose, one little French caboose.
It's like moose.
Cabai?
It's caboose.
And a moose.
More than one caboose.
Plural of caboose is cabai?
It's caboose.
Caboosey.
No, like the plural of moose is moose. Maybe so the plural of caboose is caboose.
I think it's cabise.
Oh, cabimus.
Caboobus.
Great. We all agree. We can pack this one away and talk to you guys tomorrow for minute 95 and finish out our week with Doug. Until tomorrow, I've been Jonathan.
I've been Chris.
And I've been Doug. This minute will self-destruct.